You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or K&E World Network, LLC.
It's the superhero of travel. It's Ricky Tyers from It's Your Time to Travel, ready to take you around the world by air, land, or sea, even by flying saucer. And we're live on TalkTainmentRadio.com. Radio the way it should be heard.
You're listening to It's Your Time to Travel on TalkTainmentRadio.com. Radio the way it should be heard. I'm Ricky Tyers from Tyers Tours and Travel, and you can join the conversation by calling 877-932-9766 or subscribe to our Talktainment Radio YouTube channel, and podcast is available. Our topic for today is the future of travel, part two. The last show we talked about what travel would be like, flying on an airplane, going to this place, going to that place. Well, for this show, we're going to talk about the pandemic that we're in and what travel, how we're going to get around during this pandemic because all the states are opening up. But the United States has reached a grim milestone of 100,000 deaths from the coronavirus. Almost all of them occurred within a three-month span at an average of more than 1,100 deaths a day. The deaths were our family members, our friends, our neighbors. The New York Times this past Sunday on the front page dedicated the front page to all those that had died from the coronavirus. And that was this past Sunday, May 24th. And they were not simply names on a list, they were us. But we'll get into more of that as the show goes on. But did you know your expired driver's license and real ID extension? If your driver's license or state-issued ID expired on or after March 1st, 2020, and you are unable to renew at your state driver's license agency, you may still use it as an acceptable identification at a TSA checkpoint. TSA will accept expired driver's license or state-issued ID a year after expiration. DHS recently announced an extension of time to obtain a real ID compliant driver's license. The new deadline is October 1st, 2021. So the new deadline to get a real ID compliant driver's license is October 1st, 2021. They've extended it because of the pandemic that we're in. And since we're talking about the TSA, the first half of the show is going to be basically about the TSA. The TSA has confirmed that they have over 614 federal employees that tested positive for the corona-19. 414 employees have recovered, and six of them, unfortunately, has died as a result of the virus. And they have also been notified that one screening contractor has passed away due to the virus. And the reason why I bring all this up is because the TSA has come up with new rules in passing through a TSA checkpoint. And we'll get into that. But TSA is committed to notifying the public about airport locations where TSA employees or screening contractors have tested positive for the COVID-19 virus. The chart lists airports would confirm COVID-19 cases in the last date that they worked. For the most recent screening employee who tested positive, it does not include non-airport TSA employees or contractors who have had limited interactions with the public. Passengers who believe they have come in contact with an infected individual within the past 14 days should follow the CDC's recommendation for travel associate exposure. So if you contact us, I can give you all the airports of all the cases that was confirmed. For example, Boston Logan International had 22 confirmed cases, and 22 of them were TSA screening officials. And the last time someone worked was on May 3rd. I also have Atlanta International Airport had 17 confirmed cases. 16 of them were TSA screening officials, and one was a non-screening employee, and the last time they worked was March the 18th. So we have a whole list. Newark, New Jersey is probably the highest. They have 61. They have 52 of them were TSA screening officers, and 9 were non-screening employees. So if you need to get the current list, you can always go to tsa.gov and look it up, or give us a call here at 877-932-9766, and we have a list. We have a complete list of all the airports and all those that were affected. And if you think you were affected, you need to follow the guidelines and get a hold of someone to let them know. TalkTainmentRadio.com is a 24/7, no charge, worldwide broadcasting facility with hosts delivering on various topics such as news, lifestyle, sports, law, health, wellness, religion, politics, and of course, you can always catch our show. It's Your Time to Travel on TalkTainmentRadio.com. So what I want to get into is how to pass through a TSA security checkpoint during the pandemic that we're going through. The TSA has implemented changes to the security screening process that reduce the potential for you catching the virus at the security checkpoint. In an effort to help prevent the spread of COVID-19, TSA has already begun implementing several changes, with more changes to come at airports checkpoints nationwide by mid-June. The first thing they want you to do is they want you to keep possession of your boarding pass. So instead of handing your boarding pass to a TSA officer at the travel document podium, travelers should now place their boarding pass on the boarding pass reader themselves. After scanning, travelers should hold their boarding pass towards the TSA officer to allow the officer to visually inspect it. This change reduces TSA officers' need to touch a passenger's boarding pass, thus reducing the potential for contact. They want you to separate your food from X-ray screening. Passengers should place their carry-on food items into a clear plastic bag and place the bag into a bin. Food items often trigger an alarm during the screening process. Separating the food from the carry-on bag lessens the likelihood that the TSA officer would need to open the carry-on bag and remove the food items for a closer inspection. This requirement allows social distancing, reduces the TSA officer's need to touch a person's container of food, and reduces the potential for passing the virus from one person to the other. TSA pre-check members do not need to remove items from their bag. So if you're a TSA pre-check member, you do not need to remove anything from your bag. This next item is very important. very important because if you flunk this next one, they make you go all the way back to the end of the line. So passengers should take extra care to ensure that you do not have any prohibited items, such as liquids, gels, aerosols, quantities greater than 3.4 ounces in their carry-on bags, water bottles, or shampoo. In response to the COVID-19, TSA is allowing one liquid hand sanitizer container, up to 12 ounces per passenger, in a carry-on bag. Passengers are required to remove the hand sanitizer from the carry-on bag before being submitted for X-ray screening. If a bag is found to contain a prohibited item, passengers may be directed to return to the vestibule table outside of security with their carry-on bags to remove the item and dispose of the item. The passenger may also be directed back outside security to remove items that should have originally been divested, such as laptops, liquids, gels, aerosol, and large electronics, and resubmit their properties for X-ray screening. So in this sudden change because of the virus, they're suggesting that people pack smart. Okay? Make sure that you don't have any items in your bags that you're not supposed to have, such as liquids, gels, aerosols, in quantities greater than 3.4 ounces. You can go to your local stores and buy the bottles and fill them up with whatever you want. And those bottles are 3.4 ounces. Okay? And this is because if you fail that, then they make you go back and dump out your whole bag. They make you go back and start all over again. So it's important that you follow these rules. By resolving alarms in this manner, TSA officers would need to touch the contents inside a carry-on bag much less frequently, reducing the potential of passing the virus from one person to the other. They suggest that you practice social distancing. Passengers should allow for social distancing to reduce direct contact between TSA employees and travelers whenever possible without compromising security. Noticeable adjustments leading up to the security checkpoint include increasing the distance between individuals as they enter the security checkpoint, placing visual reminders of appropriate spacing on checkpoint floors, and staggering the use of lanes where feasible. No two airports are alike, so this could look a little different at each airport. And again, they talk about practicing social distancing. They talk about wearing face protection. TSA officers at checkpoints are now using facial protection. Travelers are encouraged to wear face masks to the checkpoint as well, but passengers may need to adjust their face masks during the screening process so they can be recognized. Travelers are also encouraged to remove items such as belts, wallets, keys, and phones and put them directly into your carry-on bag instead of into the bins to reduce touch points during the screening process. So what they're saying is instead of dumping everything out, putting it into a bin the way we used to do it, you are encouraged to remove these items and then put them directly back into your carry-on bag because they're trying to reduce the touch points that's involved. So if you're traveling, and just to note that there's a lot of places opening up. Vegas opens up June 4th. Disney World is opening up. So there's a lot of places opening up. So you need to know this when you get ready to travel during these time periods. Travelers who have not flown since the pandemic are also likely to notice other changes. They include reduce security lane usage due to the reduction in passenger volume. TSA officials optionally wearing eye protection and clear plastic face shields at some locations. TSA officers will continue the practice of changing gloves after each pat-down. Plastic shielding installed at many travel document checking podiums, diverse bag search and drop-off locations, TSA officials practicing social distancing, routine cleaning and disinfecting of frequently touched surfaces in the screening checkpoint area. Many airlines and airports also are providing specific COVID-19 related guidance to travelers. Travelers should check with their airlines prior to the trip, though there has been no unified COVID-19 guidance released by the U.S. Department of Transportation. Travelers are encouraged to arrive at the airport early, as COVID-19 has affected staffing and operations across the airport. This will allow adequate time for checking bags, completing security screening, and getting to the departure date. The old rule was 2 hours. Now you probably do you probably need to do 3 hours, and if you're flying internationally, which you probably should get there 4 hours. Individuals who were traveling in the early months of the pandemic became accustomed to arriving at their security checkpoint shortly before their flight. TSA recommends that travelers no longer do so, arrive well in advance of their flight since more people are flying, and new procedures such as social distancing have been implemented in airports, potentially adding time to the pre-flight experience. And for more information on the TSA security screening process during the pandemic, visit www.tsa.gov/coronavirus. So there's a lot of changes going on when traveling and going through TSA checkpoints. We touched on a few of them. The first one is you would keep possession of your boarding pass. The second one is separate food for X-ray screening. And the third and most important one is to pack smart. You know, you should take care to ensure that you do not have any prohibited items, such as liquids, gels, aerosols, in quantities greater than 3.4 ounces in your bag. Okay, that's important, because if you flunk that, then you have to go back and take everything out of your bag, and then you may also have to go back again. So it's important that that the liquids that you carry are not in anything bigger or larger than 3.4 ounces. You need to practice social distancing. You need to wear facial protection and pull it down so that they can identify you. And just so you know, that there is no guidance from the U.S. Department of Transportation, so each airlines may do things differently, so you need to contact that airlines to find out what's appropriate for them. So in the beginning of the show, I talked about 100,000 deaths from the coronavirus. And there was an article in the New York Times May 24th, this past Sunday, and they were talking about how the United States is approaching a milestone of 100,000 people. Well, as of today, we're over 100,000 people dying from the coronavirus. And all of them, almost all of them, have died in a three-month period. So towards the end of May in 2020, the number of people in the United States who had died from the coronavirus is over 100,000. And again, almost all within a three-month period, and they died at a rate of 1,100 deaths a day. And a number is an imperfection measure when applied to a human condition. A number provides the answer to how many, but it can never convey the individual arts of life. The 100,000 waves of greeting, the morning, and saying goodnight. The immensity of a sudden toll taxes our ability to comprehend. To understand that each number adding up to 100,000 represents someone among us just yesterday who was 1,223rd person to die, or 27,587th person to die, or the 98th 431th person to die. And she may have died in a jam-packed hospital with no family member at her bedside to whisper a final thank you. Mom, I love you. He may have died in a locked-down nursing home, his wife peering helplessly through a steam window as a part of him slips away. They may have died in subdivision city apartments, too sick or too scared to go to the hospital, their closest relatives a half a world away. Or they may have died in the hospital and you're talking to them on the phone right before they expire. You know, all this is tragic. The highly contagious viruses force us to suppress our nature as social creatures for fear that we might infect or be infected. Among the many indignities, it has denied us the grace of being present for a loved one's last moments. Age-old customs that lend meaning to existence have been unended, including the scarce ritual of how we moan. Before we came together in halls and bars and places of worship to remember and honor the dead, we recited prayers and raised glasses and retold stories that left us nodding and crying through our laughter. In these vital moments of communion, it could feel as though the departed were with us one last time, briefly being lifted by the sheer power of our collective love to share that closing prayer, that parting glass, that final hug. Even in horrible times of war and hurricanes and terrorist attack that seem to crumble the ground beneath our feet, we had at least time-tested ways of grieving that helped us take that first hesitant step forward, but not now. Now, for most of those who died in the past few months, there was no large gathering. There was no recited prayers for peaceful rest. The obituaries that filled our local newspapers and Facebook pages sometimes read like an unending roll call of the coronavirus dead. Every death notice, virus-related or not, seemed to close with, due to health concerns, restrictions on gatherings. There would be no funeral service at this time, and celebration of life would be held at a time to be announced. A virtual memorial service was held instead, perhaps with mourners praying into laptop screens, followed by a burial, perhaps, with mass people watching from their cars as another coffin was received by the earth. In a larger sense, the suspension of our familiar rituals of burial or cremation reflected what life in pandemic has been like. The absence of any clear end, even the dead has to wait. Why has this happened in the United States in 2020? Why has the virus claimed a disproportionately large number of Black and Latino victims? Why were nursing homes so devastated? These questions of why and how and whom will be asked for decades to come. For now, all we can do is hold our collective breath, inch towards some approximation of how things were, and try to process a loss of life greater than what the country incurred in several decades of war, from Vietnam to Iraq. 100,000. 100,000 is a threshold number. It's the number celebrated when the family car odometer ticks one more to reach the six digits. It's the number of residents that can make a place feel like feel fully like a city. San Angelo, Texas, Kenosha, Wisconsin, Vacaville, California. So imagine a city of 100,000 residents that was here for New Year's Day, but has now been wiped from the American map. Picture this. We're in Columbus, Ohio. Picture this. Ohio State Football Stadium holds 100,000 fans on any given Saturday during the fall. Imagine we just lost one stadium full of fans that were our family, friends, and neighbors. 100,000. 100,000 is an imperfect number when applied to the human condition. This 100,000 is preparing us for the next phase of COVID-19, and that is contact tracing. One of the most important steps to take to reopen the economy as safely as possible is to create a system of contact tracing. Back in the old days, my mother worked one of many summer jobs that she had because she was a teacher. She worked for the health department. One of the things that she did was she visited people's homes. Let's say back during those days, it was a transmitted disease. So she would go to the person's house and interview the person to see all the people that person has been with. And then through the health department, they would track down these other people to let them know that they have been infected. Well, today, that system has changed. They would still interview the infected person, but now they will use your cell phone to track all the places that you've been to and use that to contact all the people that may have come in contact with you. So this contact tracing involves a lot of steps and a lot of it steps on a lot of freedoms. But the reason why they were able to open up the country, and we'll get into this in the second half of the show, and if I have time, I'll get into it now. The reason why they were able to open up the country, because in the very beginning, they didn't have this method down that they could use contact tracing. So the only way they can control everything that was going on was to shut everything down. Well, now, and I'll just go ahead and get into this. Many U.S. states are preparing to emerge from their quarantine cocoons, helping to get their economies back on track. But experts are concerned that these states have not yet created the public health infrastructure needed to safely reopen without causing a second wave of COVID-19 infections. In particular, tens of thousands of new public health workers trained in contact tracing are needed. They say 10,000. Actually, the number that we come up with is 300,000 are needed to help any hope of heading off future outbreaks in local communities. Contact tracing is the best tool we have to manage this in an ongoing way and allow our economy to open up again. So it's like we've been set up. So now we're getting ready to step into contact tracing. And how it works is, as soon as you know of a person who may have a virus or have tested positive, you work immediately to first isolate that person so that they do not spread it further. You keep them away from other people. And we'll get into more of this in the second half of the show. So, listeners, you can join the conversation at 877-932-9766. Look up in the sky. It's a superhero of travel with Ricky Tyage from It's Your Time to Travel on TalkTainmentRadio.com. Radio the way it should be heard.
For the best home fragrance and beauty products, shop Ash Kickin online.
That's Ash Kickin.
Made with 100% natural quality ingredients and handcrafted with your family in mind, Ash Kickin products are better than those other guys. Ash Kickin candles, incense, body butter, face moisturizer, and hair moisturizer are priced just right, and you can get yours at 10% off with coupon code TALK17. Support this 100% black-owned business and get your home and body smelling and feeling all right.
That's ASHKICKIN.
Shop Ash Kickin online at www.ashkickin.com.
Now we back from paying the bills, baby. Maybe we'll fire the landlord. This next song is dedicated to all the cool cats and...
Attention Central Ohio.
Stand by for an important message.
Someone once said, these times like all times are good times if we just know what to do. Linco Realty says this is the best time to buy or sell a home because interest rates are the lowest in history. Linco Realty has been providing real estate services for over 40 years in Central Ohio. Let us help you fire your landlord. If you have questions on pre-approvals, credit scores, down payments, financing, down payment assistance programs, schools, or other real estate questions, go to LincoRealty.com. Or call us at 614-375-2289. Again, 614-375-2BUY. Fire your landlord. Call us at 614-375-2289. Check out LincoRealty.com, then start packing.
I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at age 33, with not one day off since. But JDRF has my back, funding research toward a cure, prevention, and treatments that really help the millions like me to have a better life. The scientists funded by JDRF test themselves every day so that someday I won't have to. Join us. Your help is our hope. JDRF, improving lives, curing type 1 diabetes.
Green, green, green. It's our home, it's our dream.
Said making it green is making sure the air in your home is healthy for your family to breathe. Make sure you test your home for radon. It's easy. Just call 866-730-GREEN.
Make it green, green, green.
A message from the US EPA.
Our government doesn't seem to care that 9 million children have no health insurance, even though every dollar spent immunizing children against illness saves more than $16 in medical costs to make them better. Doesn't anyone see? We're wasting money and allowing children to get sick.
I am Susie Flynn. A vote for me is a vote for the 9 million uninsured children.
9 million uninsured children need a solution now. For more information, go to electsusie.com.
My name is Al Edmondson. I'm a business owner and community organizer. I want to encourage you to visit the King Lincoln District, our community. It's a great place to live, work, and worship. Catch a show at the Lincoln Theater. Enjoy smooth jazz at the King Arts Complex. Enjoy great food and visit our historical churches and newly remodeled homes. Live, work, and worship the King Lincoln District.
You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or K&E World Network, LLC.
From It's Your Time to Travel on TalkTainmentRadio.com, radio the way it should be heard. And in the first half of the show, we were getting into contact tracing and trying to explain how it works. And this is how it works, basically, is as soon as they know that someone is affected, they try to isolate that person, okay? And then they try to contact all the people that have come in contact with that person. And they try to isolate the person and then try and contact all the people that have come in contact with that person. The difference between how we do contact tracing now and how it was done 50 years ago is your smartphone. Okay, they would basically use your smartphone to determine all the places that you've been and all the people that you've come in contact with. So just so you know that Google and Apple has a contact tracing app, and we're going to talk about that in a video coming up, in a video coming up next. Okay, but we're going to talk about contact tracing and how it works. And it'll kind of give you some knowledge on the next step that they're going to use to control this virus. And this is a way that they can try and control the virus until they come up with a vaccine. Okay, and I know there's a rush to judgment to try and get a vaccine, but China used this method, and it was so strong in China, where China was actually
through the news as things that need to be implemented before we can go back to normal. But what is contact tracing? Let me share it with you, and you're going to be freaked out by the end of this video. Now, what I did is I was very interested in this, so I went ahead and I got two certificates in terms of what it was to become a contact tracer. So I spent about 9 hours. We're going to wrap it up here in about 20 minutes to just give you the highlights of what contact tracing entails and how it's going to affect you, because I guarantee you it will affect you and your family.
We talk about saving the lives and the livelihood of the American people and of course the life of our democracy. So in terms of saving lives, the only way we're going to have, and of course the life of our democracy. So in terms of saving lives, the only way we're going to have rid ourselves of this as well as open up our economy is evidence, science-based testing. Just think of the T's, testing, tracing, treatment, and isolation then when necessary, of course, with social distancing.
So let's look at the main points. Now, this is if you have COVID-19. You can either be done by test or by symptoms. Now, what our contact tracers know is that you can infect 2 days before and up to 10 days after. And how you can infect people is there's three definitions that were given in contact tracing school. One is physical, so you're hugging someone, you are kissing them, high-fiving them. Any physical contact, you could have given it to them. If you're close, within 6 feet for more than 10 minutes, so you're talking to someone and you're within that 6 feet social distancing number, well, you could infect them then. Let's say you're more than 6 feet apart, but for a longer time. At this point, you're thinking movie theaters, airplanes, trains, restaurants. So maybe not direct contact with somebody, but they're in the vicinity of the area for longer than 30 to 40 minutes. Now, what's going to happen is once you get a test that is positive, it goes to a tracer. And that tracer is going to do some research on you, find out a little bit about you, and give you a call. Now, they're going to tell you that you tested positive, and that you need to be isolated for a minimum of 10 days on the onset, and it has to be within no fever for 3 days. So if you're on day 9, but you still have a fever, you need to add another 3 days until your fever is cleared. And by isolation, I mean total isolation. This is nobody near you. Even your dog can't be there. So you can see here that specifically with a person that is symptomatic, they should maintain separation from household animals as they would any other household members and avoid direct contact with any of your pets. So you cannot contact your pets, people, anybody in your family. You need to be completely isolated. Now, what that means is you could have to go into a hotel room. If you have no way of not sharing a bathroom or any space, they will check that out. So you'll have to show like video evidence if the conference is done via teleconference. Walk them around your house. Let them know that you have space to be isolated. Now the next is quarantine. Quarantine means I am healthy. I have no symptoms. I have not contracted the disease. But maybe for 14 days, They're going to check to make sure that I haven't. So that means, again, that I cannot leave my house. And as a contact tracer, I'm supposed to set you up with social services. So if you have kids and you have no one to care for them, we'll take your kids. We'll take care of that. If you have need groceries, we'll do groceries. But you literally cannot be in contact with anybody and you cannot leave your house, even if you're healthy. You are still quarantined not to be leaving the house. Unfortunately, you could be totally healthy, get out of quarantine, and guess what? Be at a restaurant, someone else in the vicinity has it, be quarantined again. Now, I'm not sure what happened with all the other states, but what we did in California is we passed a workman's comp law that's in effect to the end of July. That workman's comp is going to take care of all of that for any employee, no matter where you contact it. The employers are going to be held responsible. I'm not sure what that is in all the other states, but it's something that passed here just recently, and who knows if that will get extended. Okay, so isolation and quarantine basically means the same thing, except quarantine is a little bit longer, right? So you're sick, you only have 10 more days. If you're quarantined, 14 days. What does this look like in normal time? Okay, so they're going to want to know, as a contact tracer, I call you up, I tell you you become positive. We've looked at your house through a video conference so you can show me that you have a place to isolate. And then I'm going to ask you, who did you come in contact with? And I'm going to tell you, if you tell me, oh, I don't know, I'm going to tell you to look at your phone and we can do it together and look at your social media and we'll figure out where you have been. And you need to make sure you know your movies, flight numbers, and anything with large venues. Now, some of the places, what they've already instituted now, are you have to put your contact information when you go to a restaurant, you go to a hair salon, any of those things, because that way they can track you. But you would say, I went to this movie, or I went to this restaurant. Everybody who's at that restaurant would be contacted then by the contact tracer. So let's say, unfortunately, I got it. Well, guess what? My family would have to be quarantined. And not just for the 10 days, they have to be quarantined for 14 days because it would be also the last time they had contact with me. So on day 4, my test comes back positive. Now they have 14 days from day 4, the last day that they had contact with me. And they have to be completely isolated from me. Let's say I was on a train. We were all sitting on the same cabin because I was getting to work and there was 10, 15 people on that train. All of them would need to be quarantined. I had gone to work. Everybody at work would need to be quarantined. I went to a restaurant after work. All of them would need to be quarantined. Can you see how a disease, when it is already widely spread, this doesn't make sense to quarantine the population in terms of you could get quarantined again and again and again. Even though you're healthy and never sick, you will not be allowed to leave your house. Now, you've been hearing that this is all voluntary. You'll hear it throughout the speeches. I've listened to a lot of governors. I'll put on the Washington governor really quickly so you can hear him say, oh, yeah, they'll follow it. But let me show you before I do that a couple of the documents that are out there. This is right on his website. He's already rolled out the plan. And basically, you can read this. Request for voluntary quarantine. This is for somebody you're a legal guardian at. It tells you to go and remain at the address by the date and time. And then I love this. It is very important that you comply with this request for voluntary quarantine. Remember, I'm not sick. Nobody's sick. Your health and the health of others depend on it. If you do not comply with this request for voluntary quarantine, we may use a detention order enforced by the police to assure your compliance. That's the strangest voluntary request I've ever received. And then this is also on the website. And I've put everything here because obviously go research this stuff yourself. But you can see here, if you use a court order because someone is not following, they have non-compliance, you can be incarcerated and fined up to $2,000 per day. Let me show you the governor. So let me show you how he's spinning it for somebody who does not follow direction.
Hi, Governor. When it comes to contact tracing, how are you guys going to handle people or families who want to refuse a test or to isolate if they want to leave their home to get groceries? I know you said they can't do that. How will you make sure they don't?